Good morning. Good morning. Maganda umaga, namaste, and buenos dias. It's great to have you here this day, the second week of the year 2008, correct? My checks still say seven. They will for about 6 months now. Many of you here last week also know we sang that song, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, last week too, and I really like it. And last week we sang it twice, this time three times. I almost think I should sit down, and for the next half hour, let's see how fast we can get. You know, I mean, that would just, better than anything I could say, would just, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, let's go. So it was great to hear you and the clapping. It's a wonderful song for our Vacation Bible School as well. It is great to have you here. As you heard, we've talked about already and you heard in the gospel reading today, we celebrate and we think about and wonder about the baptism of Jesus. There's so much we've talked about with that in history, about what that is about and who that is about. But it's great we can have that. So we want to talk a little bit about that today. But also this January 13th, the middle of the month of January. For most of us, at least if you're like me, for me, I'm getting to the point now, 2 weeks out of Christmas, I'm beginning to decompress. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Christmas is a wonderful and awesome time. Even though with its busyness and its hecticness, and even we gear it up around here that we're very busy, even with all of that, it's a wonderful time for light and celebration, for wonderful stories, for the traditions that we do as family. But we know it is a stressful time. You know, even vacations can be stressful, I am told. But we know when the holidays come around, there's stressfulness in terms of family sometimes. There's stressfulness in terms of doing the things we want to do. Getting the cards out, buying the right food, making sure the dinner goes well, making sure Uncle Joe sits at the right place at the dinner. You know, those little things we need to do. And even the wonderful and awesome tradition of gift giving can be stressful, can it not? How many of you are really good gift buyers? You know, sometimes that's maddening to me. I was hoping nobody would hold their hand up. Because I'm awful at it. You know, sometimes it's maddening to me. I've had people come into my office in the summer, usually retired people, who say, I went to so-and-so and I've got all my Christmas shopping done. There ought to be a law against that. I mean, October, maybe, but that's really stretching it. You know, you got to go down to the wire. That's the only way to do it. You know, and some of you I know are really good about that. And I see somebody right now I know is really good at that. Sometimes, some of you are very good. You have a real flair for getting the right gift at the right time. For others of us, it's difficult. We want to get a good gift, something people will appreciate, maybe be able to use. We want a gift that will share, you know, friendship or love or whatever we want the relationship that we're a part of. We want to get a gift that doesn't offend, because sometimes that's possible, that you can offend somebody, and it's not an easy thing to do. After Christmas this year, myself and my family, we had the chance to go back to see some relatives. As I mentioned, I went to a wedding and got to see some family I hadn't seen for a long time. Went to the cemeteries to see, you know, things you need to do there. But also we went to West Virginia to see my uncle. My uncle, who was in the Army, who was a coal miner and a mining inspector. And what do you get that kind of guy? So we got him some fair trade coffee, and then I found myself in the mall trying to figure out what do I get my uncle who was the coal miner, and what else to get him. You know, he loved to spend time outside, so I saw this sweatshirt on the rack. Perfect. It said Norman all over it. Insulated with a hood on it. And so we went down, we wrapped him up, we went down, we traded the gifts, and he opened the coffee, and then he opened the sweatshirt, and when he put it on, I realized why it was perfect for him. Because I think I got it for him 2 years ago. It may have been a different collar, but I'm not sure. But I realized he looked perfect in it because I always see him in it anyway. If I hadn't got it for him, he's got a half dozen of the same thing. But he did receive that graciously and said he really enjoyed the coffee. That's what he said. But isn't gift giving a hard thing to do sometimes, but an important thing? I hope your gift giving went well this year. And as we think about who we are as Christian people, part of our tradition in giving gifts comes from the wise men. We read about their story last week as they came to see the Christ child. And we know when they came to see this child in a barn, which is really weird, coming to see a king, these wise men saw a child in a barn. And even though they saw this poor guy, this poor family and this poor baby, they still gave him magnificent gifts because they knew. Because they knew. But the interesting thing, I always wondered about the gifts. The gifts are gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And symbolically, we know what they mean. Gold signifying a king. You know, they recognized him as a king. Frankincense, it's like incense, a symbol of the priesthood. They knew he was going to be a priesthood of some form or another. And myrrh, an expensive thing, but usually used at funerals to embalm a body. Perhaps foretelling of Christ's death, which was to come. A sad gift, if you will. But yet, if you look at each of those gifts that they give, in one way or another, they are establishing their understanding, their relationship with this child. A gift they have been given. And a hope that this relationship of love and grace in their hearts can grow from this child that they've been given. A relationship of king and follower, priest and member of a congregation. In relationship to care for somebody who may, you know, be killed in the future, who may die in the future. And so when we think about gift giving, we want to communicate relationship, don't we? If my uncle never wears that sweatshirt, he will remember his strange nephew got it for him. But there's a sense of relationship we want to communicate. This day as a church, and last week as a church, we have been gifted, given a gift. By families who come before us and say, would you baptize our child? And often we say, oh yeah, we got to get the water. We got to say the right words. They got to sit in the right place and which family is there and the dinner afterwards. And there's a lot of tradition and culture around it. But it's a gift to us as they bring that child forward and say, we want you to be part of family with us. That's what it says. We want you to be in relationship with us as we try our best to raise this child in ways of love and grace. So this afternoon, as Andre comes forth, and last week as we remember Ruby came forth, we remember trying to commit ourselves to be in relationship with that child and that family. And as a church, to do those things in ways of education, in ways of fellowship and service and worship that our children and youth might have a place here to know loving relationships in you and a loving relationship with God. Baptism, though, it is a tough thing, I think, in our culture. And in many ways, it is cultural. At the last church I was at, I remember sitting in my office, and I got a call, and a woman on the other end of the phone said, do you do baptisms? And I said, yes, we do. It's part of what we do. And it was a very small church that I served. And I knew that this person wasn't a member of the church. And I said, why are you calling us? And are you a member of another church someplace? And she said, no, she wasn't, but she'd like to have her child baptized. And I said, that'd be fine. I mean, we can do that. But why do you want your child to be baptized? And she said, well, my friend told me I should. Okay. And that's good. Nothing wrong with that. You know, I said, but it is a little more than that. So why don't, if you want to pursue it, you know, you're not a member of the church, and I don't know if your family is a member, but come in and we'll talk about it, and that would be fine. Well, she didn't come in, and I'm hoping she went someplace else to talk about it. But isn't that interesting? Sometimes how do we see baptism? A cultural celebration we do as family, and we do it because our family tells us we ought to do it. It's a nice ritual in which we do, and there's, again, nothing wrong with that. But if we just see it as that, we're missing the gift in the water that Christ offers us. We're missing the gift of the possibility of relationship that can grow in community and with that family. We're missing the gift that is here that we can have. And that we can grow with God. Because this is gift. It's not ritual. It's gift. Pure and simple. Let me share a story with you about gift giving. I do want to confess, it's not my story. I wish it was. It is a very good story. It's a story written by a man named Jim Cruz. And it is not, it's a fictional story. Although it sounds really true. And there's a lot of truth in it. But the story is about gift giving. It's about a young man named Jeremy. Jeremy was, according to the story, a freshman in college. And about the end of his first year in college, he realized he was going to go home. But also he knew he was going to go home, and the first thing that was going to happen in his family was, is this time of year, they celebrated his grandfather's birthday. His grandfather was 95 years old. As he came home, as the story goes, you know, he arrived home from college and realized he only had 24 hours to get a gift. Now, for those of you who are women, that's no big deal. For us men, it's like, we need 6 weeks, right? Come on, guys, help me, right? See, he had 24 hours to get a gift, and he wasn't sure what he wanted to get. And he realized, didn't feel bad about that, because he had finals and papers and all the things you have to do. But he wanted to get a really good gift for his grandfather, because him and his grandfather had a really good, loving relationship. So he found himself at the mall, looking at the mall. And I know nobody else has done this besides me. Looking at the mall, thinking, what am I going to get, Grandpa? And at the end of that trip, he found himself walking to the hardware store, the last store there. And thinking, I have no idea what I'm going to get. As he thinks about the story in his head, when he first went to the mall, he first went to the electronics store. You know, the iPod things and all the computer. And he didn't go there because his grandfather liked electronics. He went there because he liked electronics. You ever do that? Well, he went there and he, as he thought about it, it wasn't that his grandfather didn't think electronics were good. You know, he remembered the time when he was sitting with his grandfather talking about a thing called a VCR. Do you remember those? Talking about a thing called a VCR and how his grandfather had told him that, you know, he liked VCRs better than TVs. Because with VCR you can rewind and the VCR you can skip commercials. And that was a really good thing. And he thought that was wise for his grandfather to say. Another time he remembered sitting with his grandfather and his grandfather wanting him to know that he wasn't against commercials. You know, his grandfather said, sometimes commercials share with us the products out there and what we need, and nothing wrong with commercials doing that. But his grandfather told him, it's when they try to sell us stuff that we don't need and don't want. And they're very good at that. But he remembered his grandfather telling him that. So he left the electronics store and obviously didn't get anything. Second place he went to was a sporting goods store. And he went to the sporting goods store not because his grandfather liked sporting goods, but because he liked sporting goods. You know, guys, we got to get warmed up, don't we? That's how we do things. And as he walked through the sporting goods store, he realized there really wasn't anything there that his grandfather would want or need at 95. But as he walked by the shoes, he remembered that he spent hours walking with his grandfather in the park and the times they had together. And he remembered sitting on this stump, a tree had been cut down, just resting with his grandfather on that stump and talking about something he had heard in class. About how they talked about they should protect the environment and all that. And his grandfather wasn't really biased one way or another. He said sometimes there's radicals on each side of that issue. But his grandfather said, you know, in terms of protecting the environment, I think it depends on whether you plan on having grandchildren, where you stand on that issue. And he remembered that. And he went into the hardware store and he walked around and suddenly, slowly, gradually, the idea came to him. It developed slowly. And as he walked through the hardware store, he didn't see a thing because this idea was budding in his mind. What's he going to get his grandpa? He comes out of there, and as he leaves that store, he realizes he knows exactly the perfect gift for his grandpa of 95 years old. So he rushes home and rushes to his room and begins to make it. He is a crazy man. Begins to make it. And he sits through the night making it. He stays up at night making it. His mom calls up about midnight saying, aren't you going to bed? And he said, well, I'm busy working on something. And finally, about 3 in the morning, he finishes his grandfather's gift and wraps it in brown paper and goes to sleep for a few hours. They get up the next day. They go to Grandpa's house. And the gift giving starts. His brother gives him his gift, and his brother gets him a tie. His grandfather hasn't worn a tie in 15 years. But he thanks his brother and shares his appreciation. His parents get his grandfather a light that you can touch and it comes on. Do you know those? They think he needs it, Jeremy says, but he's pretty sure his grandfather doesn't need that yet. And all the gifts keep coming. And Jeremy realizes that some of the gifts really aren't helpful gifts because he's helped his grandfather box these up sometimes and take them to somebody who really needs them. And so they unwrap the gifts, and finally they get to the last one, which does happen to be Jeremy's. And he hands it to his grandfather. And as he unwraps that plain brown paper, what his grandfather sees is a poorly bound book of stories, remembrances, teachings that his grandfather has shared with him all of his life. And on the front page it said, Chapter 1. Because he realizes
there's more to write. And his grandfather says, as he unwraps it, looks at it, and puts it on his lap. He says, if I've ever wondered if it was worth my time making it to 95 years, I know now that it is. Isn't that a story? Isn't that a story? Now, for those of you that gave tithes this last Christmas, that's okay. And don't feel under pressure the next time it comes up. I've got to write something. Because many gifts can do what this story shares. What did Jeremy give? He didn't give paper and stories and remembrances. What did Jeremy give? He gave himself. He gave himself. And that can come in a tie or a book or those other things we talk about. The gift-giving process, he gave himself in that. And when we come to baptism, the gift of the child to us and the gift of God to us in the water, we are asked to give a gift. To give a gift to God who loves us.
In Romans, Paul tells us, when he talks about baptism, Paul tells us in the writing to the Roman church, he says, we were therefore buried with him through baptism into death in order that just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we too may live a new life. And living a new life is about that relationships of love and grace. We know it with each other. We ought to know it with God. Also, Peter tells us in 1 Peter that the water symbolizes baptism that now saves you also. Not the removal of dirt from the body, but the pledge of a good conscience towards God. The baptism calls us into loving relationship with God and with each other. And we are called in baptism every time. Just like the child comes forward and we say, chapter one, this is the beginning of the relationship for Andre, for Ruby, for all those children that come forth. Again, we are given the opportunity to pledge ourselves in loving relationship to God, to give our story to God and to receive that story back and to be part of what God is doing. It's about gift giving. It's about giving of ourselves. And when we do that, we never will be disappointed. So what's your chapter one? What's the story you're writing?
This week in our women's Bible study, we were just sharing. And one of the women in our retired women's Bible study, which they invite me to be part of, go figure. In our women's Bible study, one of the women talked about a story she'd heard about an individual. And it's an individual named, John Newton. Do you know the name? Choir's going, yeah, we know that name. Anybody else know that name? John Newton wrote a hymn. What's the hymn? John Newton wrote Amazing Grace. And it's interesting, when she mentioned that this week, I started to research his life a little more. Because there's an interesting movie about his life as well. He wrote Amazing Grace. And there's, if you look at the history of his life on the net or other places, there are different stories about what happened. You know, it's not all the same. It's been mythologized, if you will. But one of the things that's pretty clear about John Newton's life is that at one point, he made a decision to be in relationship with God. There's stories about him suffering. There's stories about him being impressed as a sailor in the 1700s. And there's stories about him serving on a slave ship as he helped bring slaves from Africa to America. And finally, being a captain of that ship. And the story goes that one day as he was on that ship, he saw, in the middle of a storm, a nasty storm on the sea, he saw one of the other shipmates there being washed over into the ocean and realized the brokenness of his life in that and the gift that he had, and decided at that point to accept God's grace in his life. And often we tell ourselves he went to his cabin and wrote that song, right? That isn't true. It didn't happen that way. But that moment when he suddenly realized that he needed God's grace, he thought about that, but he continued to be a slave captain. He didn't stop. Later in his life, he encouraged others to not treat slaves so harshly. Later on in his life, he encouraged those in his crew to not be so harsh on other sailors with him and to accept and even encourage religious expression. But it wasn't until he was much 20, 30 years later, as he was a pastor then, did he write Amazing Grace. But he began with a step. Baptism is about beginning. Our understanding of children is about beginning. Often we think we need to accept God's grace and turn it around overnight, right? You're converted, so it's all different. It is not. It is a first step. So I invite you today to ask yourself, where do you need